Welcome, everyone, to the Deep Dive. It is your time for the Deep Dive into goodness regarding all things college football, but specifically the Texas Longhorns. And you know where you can do your own deep dive of incredible written information, Ian?
I do.
Where's that?
InsideTexas.com. Currently having a flash sale, $1 until August 30th for new members only. That'll take you right up to the Ohio State game, which we will cover vociferously.
That's right. And then you'll be done. You'll be gone. But then you got to go buy this. This is out. It's the 13th annual 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus, Thinking Texas Football. This is the premier Texas Longhorn and SEC preview in existence. And you're going to see in a moment why it's particularly germane to have really good information from knowledgeable people that actually know stuff. Just encourage you to go buy it today. You can get it on Amazon if you want the print copy. If you want e-versions and get them instantly in your hands right now, go to Apple or go to Smashwords. Smashwords is compatible with any e-reader. It's independent media. We hope you support them. And we hope you support this. It's really good content. It's great info. I've been doing this for 13 years. It's 150 pages, over 61,000 words on your Texas Longhorns, the season schedule, the entire SEC. And there's a bunch of enrichment stuff there about NIL and building a roster in today's world, which is kind of relevant, I think we're going to find. So, Ian, let's talk about all the rosters that were built in the SEC. And let's talk about another preview, Phil Steele, which I think used to sort of set the standard for previews. Maybe lost its fastball a little bit. We're going to talk about that. If you bought Phil Steele this year, you've got Xavier Filsame starting at safety for Texas and Kalik Lockett starting at wide receiver. So good on you there. But we're going to check out the all SEC preseason teams on Phil Steele and see where we agree and disagree with where he's put different Longhorns. If you have any other comments on random SEC folks, that's cool. But we're going to try to limit this purview to just Texas-centric. Is that cool, Ian?
I'll allow it.
He'll allow it. Thank God. This show would have been so short if he said no and stormed off. All right, let's start at quarterback. We're going to start on offense. Hey, I'll give props to Steele here. He puts Arch Manning on the second team. The SEC has a bunch of worthy options. What do you think about this, Ian?
This feels pretty good to me. Have you watched much of the new Ole Miss guy?
Yeah. Austin Simmons.
Simmons?
He's good.
Yeah, there's a few guys like that that I feel like can easily sneak up, but I don't know how I would differentiate them, really. I think the top three that he has are cut above the rest of the league with a couple guys that may be up there too, but those three to me are the most solid.
For those of our listeners who are just listening on podcast form, the number one first team is Garrett Nussmeier. Second team is Arch Manning. Third team is Lenore Sellers. Fourth team, John Mateer. Yeah, I think there's other worthy potential inclusions. I don't have any problem with any of these. Aggies would probably be clamoring for Marcel Reed. That's not the right answer. That's not who we're talking about. No. I'm talking about Diego Pavia. I mean, yeah. What quarterback in college football is more proven to be worth wins to your football team than Diego Pavia?
You put this so well in the article. He's like, you almost have like a six win floor with Bobby. Yeah. I don't know if he can take an 8 or 9 SEC team to 12 or 13 wins because he's going to run up against ceiling, but yep. It's such a hard, steady floor. And to a school like Vanderbilt, that's worth so much. So that one's tricky.
Yeah, that is tricky. It just really depends. You could honestly argue to me, hey, man, I don't care that he's going to make Vanderbilt 3-5 in conference instead of 0-8. Like, they're still 3-5, so sorry. Yeah. I get that. The other argument, the ceiling argument, is if you're going to project the ceiling of Arch Manning, where's DJ Lagway?
Yeah.
That guy could win the Heisman.
That one is tough. I might go Lagway over Mateer in the fourth spot.
I'll tell you what is going to be appealing about Mateer. He plays the win-the-game position for OU.
Yes.
he is going to put up a huge amount of stats, and there's going to be a couple of high visibility games where he just rushes for 130 yards and throws for 270 and accounts for four touchdowns. And it may be in a losing effort, but he's going to catch your eye.
If, yeah, unless, you know, he doesn't, and it proves he proves unable to scale up to SEC play with his style. You mentioned there's a bunch of guys like Arch that it's like, if Jackson Arnold broke out this year and was a very different player, that would not be shocking. Austin Simmons could be like that. Obviously, DJ Lagway. Maybe Marcel Reed. I have more doubts on that one. But I'm with Steele, and I think you, and thinking that Manning is one of the more sure thing, this guy's going to break out talents.
I agree, and I'll have to say, I think Nussmeier, in some respects, may be a little bit overdone. People are talking like 1-1 for him for the NFL draft. I don't think that's the case.
Thank you.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I think he may have another jump in him in ability. Just from having played a full season and coming back with some of those receivers. I expect Arch Manning this year to be better than Nussmeier was last year. But it's also possible Nussmeier levels up too.
All right, now we're moving on to running back. Hey, Ian, this can't just be us complaining about where Longhorn should be. It should also be calling balls and strikes. Phil Steele has Quintrevion Weisner on the first team, along with Jaden Ott from Oklahoma. He's the former Cal transfer, of course. Second team is Le'Veon Moss for A&M. We hope he's healthy. Ahmad Hardy from Missouri, the guy that we faced from ULM that everybody liked. Third team running back, Nate Frazier from Georgia. Caden Durham from LSU. Fourth team running back, Devon Booth from Mississippi State. Jamarian Miller from Alabama. They omitted Jaden Baugh from Florida, which is no bueno because he's probably one of the best one, two, or three rushers in the entire SEC. That's not good, Phil. But I also have to say, I don't think Quintrevion Weisner is going to be first team running back, and I'm not sure it's deserved. What do you think?
Paul, the only player that he lists at running back that I wouldn't trade Weisner for is Jaden Ott. Every other running back that he has below, I think would be a better bet to give Texas the volume power back that they need. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, unless Weisner levels up in a major way, which we're both kind of rooting for, even though it'll make you look a little dumb.
I hope so.
Because, I mean, he's the ultimate. He came through for Texas in such a big way last year. Always feel like you got to say that because you don't want to root against somebody that was so clutch. But, yeah, I mean, that Caden Durham is an extremely talented running back.
LSU guy. Yeah, you're right.
Nate Frazier was just like needing to pick up his reads a little quicker in the Georgia run game. They're like big, powerful, athletic dudes.
Yeah, and then, of course, Jaden Baugh, who's omitted from the list, is arguably the most talented and gifted running back in the league. Here's the thing about Weisner that I'll mention, and part of this is just projection of talent, but also production. The goal of this Texas coaching staff is not to have Quintrevion Weisner be our bell cow. The goal is to have a disseminated workload where Weisner is getting between 10, 12, maybe 15 touches at most. And if that's the case, he's going to be very effective for us and very, very useful, but he won't be first team all SEC. Let's move on to wide receiver.
First team in our hearts.
First team in our hearts, 100%. Let's talk about wide receiver. The first team is, this wasn't hard to put together, I don't think.
No.
You can make some arguments, but we'll see. First team wide receiver, Ryan Williams from Alabama. He's basically a gazelle in shoulder pads. Cam Coleman from Auburn. If you're not familiar with Mr. Coleman's game, you may become familiar this year. Aaron Anderson from LSU, little darty guy who's very productive. And then second team, Eric Singleton, the former Georgia Tech speedster. He's now at Auburn. Kevin Coleman from Missouri, formerly at Mississippi State. Ryan Wingo, Texas. I think that's a guy who has the opportunity to be on that first team, actually, if things go right. They've got Caden Lee, Eugene Wilson, and Jeremy Bernard on third. Fourth team is Deion Burks, Casey Concepcion from A&M, and then, of course, Zachariah Branch from Georgia. Think about Branch, still been more athlete than receiver. When he left, USC sort of yawned. So that always is an interesting indicator. But I think Ryan Wingo makes sense here on the second team. If you want to argue for him on the first team on a projection, that's cool. What's missing is DeAndre Moore.
Yeah, I think Moore is worthy. I mean, he's more worthy than Zachariah Branch, I would say. The odds of Branch working well in that Georgia offense are considerably less than DeAndre Moore breaking out for Texas.
Yeah, I mean, is 875 yards and 9 touchdowns on 65 catches a crazy projection for DeAndre Moore?
No, that's probably about what he'll do.
Yeah. Seems to me like that would put you on third or fourth team, right?
I would think so. You would. I think that's more than what Branch will do, or maybe some of these other guys.
Yeah, and honestly, I think they might have picked the wrong Georgia receiver. I think
no doubt
Noah Thomas might be the guy that's their go-to, or it might be their outside guy that transferred from Miami who had to sit out last year for some legal reasons.
Yeah.
I don't have any problem with this list. I do think that DeAndre Moore is an omission. And I think that you also need to be aware of a guy that was not mentioned here, Florida's Dallas Wilson. I watched the Florida spring game. He caught 10 balls for 195 yards. And he basically looks like a young Rome Odunze. So I don't throw that name out lightly. If you're a Texas fan, you probably respect that guy. All right, let's move on to the offensive line.
Sure.
Oh, tight end. Eli Stowers from Vanderbilt is first team. I don't think anybody has any problem with that. Second team, our own Jack Andrews from Texas. Third team is Daquan Wright from Ole Miss. Fourth team, Miles Kitzelman from Tennessee. I have a couple of questions about this. The two best tight end rooms in the SEC this year are going to be Georgia, which is Lawson Luckley and Oscar Delp.
Yeah. And then
Ole Miss, which is Daquan Wright and Luke Haas. And Haas may actually be the guy who catches more balls. I don't have a real problem with this. Hey, let me ask you a question, Veer and Shoot expert. Have you ever seen a Veer and Shoot offense that the tight end caught like 50 balls, you know, had like 70 targets?
Guy
like that?
Lebby has veered in that direction a couple times.
Okay.
Heupel and like any of the Riles guys, they often go like the opposite extreme where the tight end is just a movable offensive lineman.
Yeah, you're a blocking surface.
Yeah. Riles had it down to an art where when he played four down teams, he'd use him as like a fullback. And if he played three down teams, he'd use him as a tight end. Just whichever created the better angles and the better, more bubbles or whatever to attack in the run game. The only time he ever threw to those guys was like first and goal, try to slip them through into the end zone, something like that.
Yeah. The thing about Stowers in Vanderbilt, I've got a specific section on this
about
him and Diego Pavia that I'm really proud of. So I've encouraged all of y'all to go read it because it explains why Stowers is so good, because he's actually catching balls in that 0 to 9 yards from the line of scrimmage area, but he's maximizing these into like 18 yard gains. And that he and Pavia are the secret. They are the key to the entire Vanderbilt project. and it's those two in symbiosis that makes it work. So I love that Phil Steele made Eli Stowers the first team tight end. Jack Andrews, is there any doubt this guy's going to catch at least 50 balls for Texas?
Not really. He should be good.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you on Stowers, though.
Sure.
He's kind of like, you know, you hate to bring this guy up, but he's not really a traditional tight end. He's a little more like Aaron Hernandez, where he's kind of like a flex athlete, you know?
Murderer.
Maybe a figurative murderer.
So I'll
he's not like, a blocking receiver hybrid, really. You know,
well, so he came to tight end late. If you guys will recall, he was a quarterback recruit from the great state of Texas at A&M. Didn't work out for him in College Station. He transferred out, and like so many A&M recruits, he found great success elsewhere. The list continues. But he followed Pavia from New Mexico State. So some of that was getting his body built up. He's now up to about 240. He used to play at 225, and he's actually starting to get better at tight end stuff. But you're right. He's not like a dominant blocker or anything. But he does play inline tight end, but they move him around. You're right. They line him up in the backfield. They'll have him released to the B gap. You know, they'll have him do all sorts of stuff. But he also puts his hand down, and he'll line up at tight end, and Pavia will hit him on traditional play action.
But even the stuff he does really well, it's like a lot of times it's not stuff other tight – the things that he's killing people on are not normal tight end things.
Yeah, Vanderbilt's whole approach is so asymmetrical and so off-putting. You understand why they were successful. The question is, now that SEC defensive coordinators have had a year to review it, is that efficacy going to continue? The answer for some will be yes. The answer for others will be an emphatic no. And so you'll see Vanderbilt's offense get stymied a little more this year. Let's move on to the offensive line. Is that cool?
Yeah, let's go.
Centers, they have Parker Brailsford on the first team. That's incorrect. It should be Jake Slaughter, who's the best center in the country. He's the second team for Florida. Connor Liu is the third for Auburn. Fourth is a random guy they grabbed from Missouri, which Phil Steele repeatedly does. Tolleson, I'm actually familiar with his game. He's actually a pass-blocking liability. So they grabbed him because he's had 30-something starts, and they were just looking for a name. You could put Cole Hudson in here. You could put some random other center from any other SEC school. I don't think we necessarily have an argument here. Let's move on to the offensive line where we have some significant arguments. I'm not going to read off every name because he combines the guards and the centers and he goes through four teams. So that's 16 total names.
Yes.
Or maybe I will read it off in a second. But who's missing from the first, second, third, and fourth team all SEC O-line?
Trevor Goosby. Nowhere to be found.
Good Lord. So Phil Steele. Maybe do a little Google search on NFL draft prospects, and that could have pointed you in the right direction. Or you could have watched the last five games of the season in which Trevor Goosby played and basically played co-equally to Kelvin Banks and better than Cam Williams, frankly, as a pass protector, against a murderer's row of defensive ends.
Yeah, this is pretty poorly done here. It's almost like they just saw that he was like a low four-star former backup. And they're like, expect Texas to take a step back without any VHTs to replace Kelvin Banks or whatever.
That's right. Yeah, that's unfortunate. There's some other things in here that are very puzzling. Some of the guys, he picked Fernando Carmona from Arkansas to be the first team O-line. Fernando Carmona was an above SEC level replacement tackle who they're now moving to guard.
Yes.
He's probably a fourth team type guy. That's really weird to have him on the first team. Caden Proctor, I get the name and I get the projection. His actual on-field play has not yet warranted first team O-line. So I would actually feel comfortable switching him out with Goosby. Trey Zune from A&M is kind of like a reliable multi-year starter. He'll be like a fourth rounder. That's fine. They have Chase Bizantis over Armaj Reed Adams at A&M, and Reed Adams is the better of the two guards. DJ Campbell's down here at 14. I think some Texas fans would have a big objection to that, the way sort of Campbell's built up. I got to say, based on-field performance, I don't have a huge problem with this. What do you think, Ian?
Yeah, I think let's see it, DJ, before we start really boosting you up too much.
He could have a big contract here. There's no doubt.
Yeah. Let's see it, though.
Yeah, I agree.
Preseason doesn't matter that much, so earn it.
If you read my preview, I'm very skeptical of Missouri. I call them the Paper Tigers because of they're basically a creation of their schedule. Ian. They played three SEC teams with an SEC winning record. Guess what their record was against those three teams?
I think it was 0-3.
0-3. They got blown out twice, and they lost a close game, which ironically was their best performance of the year. But they lost to A&M by 31 and Bama by 34, and they lost to South Carolina by 3, which actually I thought was their best performance of the year. But the reason I brought them up is because we're both a little bit from Missouri on DJ Campbell. Hopefully he can prove out and have a great senior year, or a great final campaign, I should say. All right, let's go on to the defense. Oh, but before we do that, you need to go on the offense in your mortgage life. You need to dial this number, 832-557-1095. That's 832-557-1095. Or go to mortgagesbygabe.com. Why Gabe? Over 20 years in the industry, former National Merit Scholar. I was just interacting with him the other day. He's in San Diego on another one of his reward trips. Why? Because he's one of the highest revenue mortgage guys in the state of Texas. And the reason is because he works his butt off for his clients, and he's a broker. He takes your deal and he shops it to 60 different lenders and has them compete and bid against each other rather than just run it up the flagpole at Big Bank USA, where you're going to get the Chase rate or the Wells Fargo rate or fill in the blank rate. No, no, you need the best rate and you need the best guy in your corner. That's Gabe Winslow, 832-557-1095. Ian, I'm distracted by the beauty of the wood paneling and the air conditioning unit behind you. This is a wonderful rustic place. I'm digging it.
Yeah, it's been very nice. It's a little loud.
You just muted yourself. There you go.
Oh, that's funny. I think I pushed the mute button on the mic. Yeah, it's a very nice place. Twin Elm Guest Ranch out in Bandera, Texas.
Nice. Love it. Love a good horse ranch. All right, let's talk about the defense. Let's talk about the Hosses up front on the defensive line. First team, Colin Simmons, Texas. I don't think we have any questions or problems with that. Kristen Miller from Georgia, Caleb Banks from Florida, Dylan Stewart from South Carolina. I have zero issues with that first team, and I think Colin Simmons is deserving of the first team. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Simmons is a no-brainer. If these Florida guys are as good as we think and still thinks they're going to be, that team is flying a little too low under the radar.
Yeah, well, I'm doing my best to raise their profile. I'm in love with them in the preview. They just have a very difficult schedule, so we'll see what happens. Second team, they have R. Mason Thomas, Tim Keenan from Bama, Cameron Ball from Arkansas, Trey Moore from Texas. So R. Mason Thomas, Cameron Ball, and Trey Moore could all be dropped a level, and I love Trey Moore. But I think you have to elevate Keldrick Falk and Tyreek Sapp from Florida.
Yes.
And honestly, Cameron Ball is just a run stopper from Arkansas. He doesn't do anything else. So there's value in that. But to me, he's like a classic fourth team guy, third team guy. And then I will say down at the bottom of the list, Grayson Halton from OU, fourth team on the defensive tackle. Extremely disruptive defensive tackle. So if you value disruption, he probably needs to be on the second team, maybe the third team. You know who's missing from this list? LT Overton. He's going to be picked probably in the second round, Ian, maybe the late first. Again, that's another Phil Steele omission that's just kind of puzzling.
Yeah, there's, a couple that stand out. I think there may be another guy that ends up higher than Trey Moore on here. Or, like, it's possible that Trey Moore puts up good stats, but he does it somewhat about at linebacker. Just, like, pass rushing from different angles at linebacker.
Yeah.
I almost want to give, like, a nod to Ethan Burke.
Yeah, Ethan Burke's hard because he doesn't have the big explosive sort of things. But if you put him on the fourth team, I wouldn't argue with you.
He's going to play inside a lot this year. On third downs.
Yep.
And he might just, reach his way with those crazy long arms and do a lot of sacks in congested pockets and a lot of tip passes. And we'll see.
I agree. Let's move on down. Let's talk about linebacker. So the first team I've got no problems with. Anthony Hill, Texas. Deontay Lawson, Bama. Whit Weeks, LSU. CJ Allen, Georgia. I can just tell you from doing my research and my preview, Georgia and Texas are head and shoulders above everybody else in terms of traditional off-the-ball linebacker talent. Georgia's second-team linebackers would be the starters at 90% of other SEC schools. That's how loaded they are. It's ridiculous.
Normal Georgia nonsense.
It's normal. Yeah, it's kind of normal for them but at this point.
The fourth-team guy, Xavien Soray, is literally a guy that was a backup at Georgia and couldn't find the field.
Yep.
And he had like 100 tackles at Arkansas last year, and he's a good player.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. Obviously, we have no problems with Anthony Hill Jr. being the first team. Do you feel that there's any Texas guys who should have been on here?
No. I don't know if any of them are going to get a chance to stand out enough. It might be like a timeshare next to Anthony Hill.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's – I think we're going to have a bunch of guys playing and doing different stuff, and I don't think you're going to be able to rack up the big stats.
Yes.
Catch attention. One thing I do want to mention is an aside that made me laugh and talking about Phil Steele just grabbing random people off of depth charts to fill out his second, third, and fourth team at linebacker. This guy Longwell, Brian Longwell from Vanderbilt, he was the seventh or best eighth best player on Vandy last year. On their D, and they were the 75th ranked defense. So, like, you saw them play in low scoring games. That was not a function of their dominant defense. That was a function of Pavia and the offensive structure. But it just made me laugh because he just randomly grabs the guy from a depth chart who's a returning starter. And then, of course, the obligatory Harold Perkins is on the second team, Ian. The guy that got hurt, LSU's defense instantly got better.
Yeah, I actually, that was so predictable that I predicted it.
You did indeed predict it.
I and then later, a little birdie told me that LSU's defensive staff thought it was a lot easier to build the defense when they didn't have to include him.
Yeah, so that's the big thing is he's burned a couple of defensive coordinators now who are like, we have to create a feature role for Harold Perkins.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you don't have to create a feature role for Harold Perkins. Maybe Harold Perkins needs to fit into the defense. And I think what he can do is be a really good blitzer in certain situations. And that's about it.
And like I said, like 2 years ago, if you want to be a really good blitzer, you need a position from which to blitz.
Yes.
That's the whole point of the blitz is like, oh, wait, that guy's coming too. And he doesn't, it was like when Texas had that package I called Hager is coming. And they would line Hager up all over the place and he would pretend like he was going to do anything other than blitz. And then he would blitz. And it was the most predictable thing in the world.
One thing that is funny is you line up Whit Weeks next to Harold Perkins, all the pure traits guys, all the star chasers put Weeks on the bench. And they would start Harold Perkins. And then 2 weeks in, after your second game, you put Whit Weeks in and your defense goes up like 40 spots, right?
Yeah.
I recall some arguments you had very vociferously with some former contributors at Inside Texas who said you have to build the defense around Harold Perkins. And I think you were vindicated in that discussion.
Well, I was even about like, I was like, I don't really know if he's a real five-star because he doesn't even play a position. And it's going to take forever for them to figure out how to use him. And then, some people didn't agree with that. They're like,
interesting counterpoint to Harold Perkins is Suntareen Perkins from Ole Miss. If you're not familiar with him, he's 6'1", 210. And he effectively played edge for them last year.
He's what everybody thinks Harold Perkins is.
That's right.
And his name is even Perkins.
I think some of that was allowed by the surrounding personnel at Ole Miss because they had so many good players on that defensive line.
Yeah,
I'm curious to see what he does this year. But he's a very unique player. If you haven't seen him, he's 6'1". He's the size of a big safety. His arms hang down to his ankles, and he can play edge. The problem is people run at him, and they're effective in doing so. So Ole Miss is going to have to move him around and do some stuff, but – if you want to see a real Harold Perkins, it was this guy. All right, shall we move on?
Yeah.
Let's go to the DBs. Cornerback. First team cornerbacks. They has Dalen Everett from Georgia, Will Lee from A&M. Second team is Jalen Kilgore from South Carolina. Hey, if you guys aren't familiar with his game, he's excellent. Jermaud McCoy from Tennessee, also excellent. Really, I think he's the best shutdown corner in the conference.
Didn't he blow out his knee?
He got hurt. So if he's not back healthy, he's not going to be on the fourth team, much less the second.
Yeah.
Domani Jackson from Alabama and Malika Muhammad are the third team cornerbacks. Fourth team is Kayan Lee from Auburn and Eli Bowen from OU. I loved Eli Bowen from OU. I think he could finish higher, actually, on this list. Do you have any problem with Manny Muhammad on third team?
No, that feels about right. I think we're expecting him to level up. But the last we saw him, he was clearly overmatched against top receivers in the playoffs. So he needs to level up in a big way to be even third team, really. So,
yes, several SEC teams brought in kind of heavy hitters from the portal. We'll see how they adapt. But Cameron Calhoun at Bama, he came from Utah. That's a name to keep on your mind. Brandon Cease at South Carolina. And then Mansoor Delane, he's from Virginia Tech. He's at LSU now. They could all have big years. Hey, we might see Kobe Black on this list.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Saquon.
I am worried about Texas's ability to cover people next year.
Maybe the pass rush will do our coverage for us.
I don't think so.
Safety. We got Michael Taft. They misspelled his name. Very disrespectful on the first team, along with KJ Bolden from Georgia, who was kind of a standout freshman. He looks like he's going to be, you know, ho-hum, another first-round Georgia safety in 2027. Second team is Isaac Smith from Mississippi State. I kind of have problems with that. Jalen Catalon, Missouri, still out there playing. He's healthy. He had a big year for UNLV. This is his fourth school. He's 24 years old. Look, if he's healthy, he belongs on here. Dylan, says they misspelled his name, but a guy from Missouri. A.J. Halsey, who came in from Houston. He's at LSU. They picked another random guy from Vanderbilt at the fourth team safety, and then Keon Saab. They're missing a guy from Bama, Bray Hubbard, who's probably one of the top four safeties in the conference, and he's not even on the top fourth. He's not even fourth team. So, again, it's a big Phil Steele miss. What do you think about Taft on the first team? Would you have any problem if he's on the second?
He could be lower, and I'd be okay with it. Taft being first team is emblematic of everything this list gets wrong at safety, which is that it's valuing the guys that are like big and good tacklers. And if you can cover them up and let them be free hitters, free from dangerous responsibilities, they'll rack up stats for you like a slot receiver.
Yep.
But other teams are going to be trying to put Taft, Catalon, and Halsey in particular into coverage matchups and attacking them all day long.
There's another guy from our friends above the Red River missing from this list that I think fits that category.
Yeah. Well, he probably should be on here anyway because he's so good at other things.
He should be on here. Robert Jennings.
Yeah.
I have no problem with Taft on the first team. And part of it is because this isn't just a set of discrete NFL traits. It's what you bring to the defense. And in terms of his intelligence and his communication, he's absolutely invaluable. For that reason, Georgia is going to miss Dan Jackson.
Yeah. He was basically their Michael Taft.
You know who's missing from this list that I think has huge upside? I think you agree with me. Two Texas guys.
Yes. Jelani McDonald and Derek Williams have – each of them have as much talent as I think anybody on this list. Easily.
Yes.
I don't even recognize some of these people.
Yeah, exactly.
McDonald, I mean, he might end up just being like Texas's, you go here wherever we need you this week, Jelani. And then Williams had just outstanding play range when he was healthy, if he can get back to that.
I love when you're big safety is one of your best tacklers. And as a run defender, PFF graded Jelani McDonald as our best run defender. And that included a team that had like Alfred Collins on it. So that's pretty awesome. And then also there are real debates about Jelani McDonald when he first arrived on campus about, I think he might be a corner. That's usually a good thing for a safety. At some point in his career, you said, I think he might be a corner.
I've never really known what to make of him. I'm still like curious to see what he looks like this year.
He's a badass.
I mean, I know that he's good around the box. I don't have any doubts about that. He's at baseline. He's basically what they think a lot of the guys on this list are.
Agreed. The Randon Fontenette from Vanderbilt made me laugh. He's their nickel that they blitz like every other down.
Oh, that dude.
Yeah. And yeah, he just, that's all he does. So I don't even understand. Like,
he should have been.
It's the most schematic player imaginable. And they, Phil Steele's like, oh, I don't know, we're running out of names. Just throw this guy on from Vanderbilt.
See, what people don't get is that the guy behind him, that's the dude.
That's the guy that needs to be on this team. Yeah.
The guy that has to cover for him when he's blitzing all the time and picking up all these different coverage assignments. And then hopefully you don't even know his name because they can't throw because he's covering the guy.
Well, so that guy graduated and his last name was Taylor, and he was Vanderbilt's best player, CJ Taylor. He was their best player at safety. And that's the guy behind the guy, quite literally.
He get drafted?
No. UDFA, interestingly. So Vanderbilt's two highest graded defenders from last year were both deep safeties, both UDFAs, which should tell you something.
I didn't know they're both gone. That's kind of encouraging because they were pretty tough last year on Texas.
Schematically, they just play such an asymmetrical brand of football. They're almost unblowoutable, right? If that's even a word. What's interesting is the teams that brought the best game plans, Vanderbilt was kind of a yawner for them. And interestingly, the team that had the best game plan for Vanderbilt, South Carolina last year. They beat them in a snoozer. It was 28-7, just cruised through the game. And they basically had that really good front. They had that really good defense. And instead of penetrating, they just played everything straight up. They have those incredible edges, specifically Dylan Stewart. They didn't fly him upfield. They just played everything base, put eight men in the box, and said, beat us throwing the ball. And Vanderbilt said, well, that's not really what we do. Yeah. South Carolina said, well, you will score 7 points then. And that's what happened. So let's see. Is there anything more we want to hit? No, I think that was it on the Phil Steele team. There is a little something about Oklahoma. Ian, you seem to have a special interest in our neighbors to the north particularly. And you've been tracking their interesting administrative jostlings and power struggles and all the things that are happening up north. Give us an idea of what is happening, because you wrote a really interesting and informative article recently on Inside Texas about the OU coup, with the O and U in the middle of coup capitalized.
Well, they had this very interesting deal where they brought in Randall Stephenson to be the executive advisor to the football program. Y'all may know Randall Stephenson as a former CEO of AT&T.
Who he
bought out a bunch of satellite companies when like streaming was on the rise, and it killed AT&T stock, and he got golden parachuted out the plane. And he was an advisor. Was he an executive advisor for the Boy Scouts, or was he like a president or something?
He was the guy responsible for allowing girls into the Boy Scouts, because I guess there's no such thing as the Girl Scouts. Oh, wait, there is such a thing as Girl Scouts. And he's the one who screwed all that up. And he's responsible for my son losing interest in the Cub Scouts. So great job there, Randall.
Fresh off of those two brilliant successes, he was able to talk the Oklahoma Board of Regents into making him the executive advisor with king-like powers, apparently. He's the one that appointed Jim Nagy. And then when Nagy was made the general manager, it was like, okay, you're going to report to Randall Stephenson and, I guess, Joe Castiglione, the athletic director. And not Brent Venables. So Stephenson is in charge, apparently, of selecting the new athletic director. kind of like when Brent Venables would trade out defensive coordinators. And I would, every time he does it, I've said, Brent Venables has fired Brent Venables from defensive coordinator. Expected replacement was Brent Venables. I think the new athletic director is going to be Randall Stephenson through a proxy. And this is bad news for Brent Venables. Because Castiglione was like, we don't know. I don't think Castiglione got out because he wanted to. I think he got edged out where he felt like, I don't want to sit here on the sideline and just watch. So he's done. There's not really any allies left for Brent Venables. There's nobody for whom Brent Venables is their guy. And if you're Randall Stephenson and you want to complete your takeover to take Oklahoma into the future of college football, you don't want to do it with this guy that Castiglione appointed. You want to do it with your guy. My guess is anything less than 8 wins in Venables is toast. And 8 wins may be even a little bit iffy if they have a guy that he likes.
Yeah. Interesting thing about Venables right now. So in the offseason, he's on his third defensive coordinator, as you said. He's had a different defensive coordinator every year. It's like the drummer for Spinal Tap, right?
Yeah.
But he's effectively a glorified defensive coordinator because he did not hire Ben Arbuckle.
Are you sure? Arbuckle,
yes. Ben Arbuckle was hired for him by the Stephenson cabal. Because he blew the Luttrell thing so badly that they were like, we're taking this out of your hands. He's not picking his own personnel. Jim Nagy's in charge of the personnel at Oklahoma. Full stop. He does not report to Brent Venables.
Yeah. So
Venables can literally walk over to Nagy's office and be like, hey, I don't like these last three guys we took. And Nagy will shrug and go, I don't work for you. Why are you in my office?
Yeah.
So
it's amazing.
I mean, it's kind of a crazy structure. Now, here's the thing.
And also, Paul, I don't think that that's gone over super well. I don't think it's the kind of thing where the Oklahoma football coaches are like, we're so glad to be offloading this.
Yeah.
This is how things are better now. There's less on our plates. We can focus on coaching. I think they are pissed that they don't get to choose their own players anymore.
You know, I would say this. If you've got a GM that you agree with philosophically, and they're absolutely amazing at their job, then it is a blessing.
Right.
But that's not – Brent Venables didn't pick Jim Nagy. Like,
yes.
The two don't have any relationship to each other other than they both want OU to win, obviously. But they have different opinions on how that's best achieved. So I think it's a really interesting thing. All that said, even with all this potential chaos and Game of Thrones stuff, what if Nagy's really good at his job? What if Arbuckle was a good hire? What if bringing John Mateer was the best available quarterback? And what if Brent Venables is much better as just a glorified defensive coordinator? Could it work?
No, it's not going to work.
Okay.
Because what's going to happen is like something bad is going to happen and they're not going to circle the schooners like they normally do.
The schooners.
And it's going to just disintegrate. Like we've seen at Texas a million times, when you don't have like a clear hierarchy with one guy in charge, like really quality controlling everything, then everything just snowballs. Every time anything goes wrong, it just spirals out of control. And there's always things slipping through the cracks. And you like get your finger in one hole and then some pop water starts burping. Breaking through something else. I would bet anything that happens to Oklahoma this year.
Well, the worst thing that can happen, and you know you're in a true bureaucracy, is when you go to someone at the highest levels with a problem and they say, that's not my department.
That's the other thing. They are all vying for control.
Yes.
So if something goes wrong on defense, everybody else is going to be like, oh, shoot. If only I were in charge and I could go fix that. You know, and the same for Venables. Like, well, your guy Arbuckle's screwed it up. I don't know. My defense played great.
Yeah, I just think it's a really interesting scenario. There's a lot going on, and it's funny because for years we sat and watched a pretty efficient, pretty buttoned up Oklahoma, particularly with Bob Stoops, just sort of make it look easy. Because Stoops and Castiglione had very clear lines of hierarchy and power and demarcation. I'll handle this. You handle this. And Stoops was the traditional college football coach. He was the God King, right? And yeah. All roads led to Bob Stoops. So there was no like Bob Stoops could hire and fire whoever he wished or pleased on his own staff, including some people not on his staff, right? So I think they've gone from that model, which is the traditional college football model, to something that's very weird and very different. And it's the kind of stuff exactly that Randall Stephenson screwed up in all of his previous stops. It's the same characteristic of blame passing, breaking things up into little troughs, not having accountability to each other, siloing, not good stuff for running a college football program.
And also like being caught up in current thing.
Yes.
Current thing is we need a general manager. We need a good front office like they do in the NFL because college football is going to be like the NFL now. So I'm going to appoint a general manager and parachute him into an Oklahoma office with all dudes that have been around the program for 20, 30 years. Totally not going to resent this guy getting parachuted in and telling him what to do. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's three programs right now with super powerful GMs in college football. You know who they are?
Stanford,
Andrew Luck.
That might actually work because it's not working so well yet.
Not working well so far, buddy. They just got picked clean like a bones on the Sahara.
Well, yeah.
OU, we just talked about, and Cal. Oh,
of course.
This flew under the radar for a lot of people, but Cal had a massive power struggle this offseason that led to all of their transfers, including Jaden Ott and us getting Jack Endries. Basically, Ron Rivera is now their Jim Nagy, and he's kind of actually in charge of the program. And I think Wilcox more or less reports to him now. So Todd Wilcox needs to quit that job and go be a DC somewhere.
Man, I got him and Aranda. If PK were to retire or get run over by a Segway or leave or whatever, I'd be curious if Aranda still wants to be a head coach, if Wilcox still wants to be a head coach, and I don't know, maybe there's another one. Jim Leonard, probably not, but.
Wink Martindale could be available.
Yeah. They actually felt like he started to figure it out last year.
He actually changed all of his habits about mid-year, which is really funny to see, because you think he's going to come in and show the college game how it's done. And Sark very early said, nah, this is like kind of how it works. And he is like, I guess this is why I got fired at the Ravens. So I think fear did the work of reason there in that regard. But hey, we hope reason was a part of this podcast and this broadcast for y'all. And there was no fear in doing the deep dive with me and Ian. For Ian Boyd, I'm Paul Wadlington saying, go to Inside Texas right now, pay your one American dollar, and become a member until August 30th. You'll want to stick around. It's the best Longhorn conversation on the internet. And then finally, this, what I'm holding in my hand, or it's up on your screen, the 2025 Longhorn Football Prospectus. You can buy it now on Amazon, Smashwords, or Apple. Go, link is in the description. Just click on that little link, and you'll be able to buy it right now and get it in your hot hands. Amazon Prime, this thing can be in your hands in 24 to 48 hours. For Ian Boyd, I'm Paul Wadlington saying, thanks for doing the deep dive.